Good afternoon, folks. I'm Chuck Dill, and welcome to the seventh episode of the Nerd Orchestra Podcast. This is the podcast that takes you through a journey of the music that scores your favorite action and adventure movies. I grew up in the 1970s, loving comic books and all sorts of genre movies. I've loved orchestra movie soundtracks ever since I was able to tape the opening of the Superman the Movie off of a network television broadcast on my boombox. Unfortunately, I have no musical education, but don't fret. I'm joined in this venture by my more than qualified co-hosts, Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband from the world-famous Checkered Past podcast. Dr. Bob, why are you two so qualified to be doing this with me?
Well, we also grew up in the 1970s. We also love action and genre movies, but we hate money, so we got terminal degrees in music performance, and here we are.
That always amuses me when you say that.
Tonight, we will be looking at Beetlejuice, an awesome movie.
What's the name again?
Beetlejuice.
One more time?
Beetlejuice.
Oh, crap!
A wonderful movie from 1988 by Tim Burton, with Danny Elfman doing the score. So we're breaking format a little bit. I really did not want to double up a composer until we've done a few more composers, but we're cutting in with Danny Elfman. Why are we doing that?
Because the sequel is coming out.
All right.
40 years later.
40.
Not
oh
40,
God,
just
no.
35.
So hopefully this will drop before the sequel comes out and we can tickle your fancy as you head into the movie theater to see that sequel. Beetlejuice was released in March. A girl asked me out on a date to go see it with her.
What? Wow.
That's right. She was buttering me up to go to her to prom with her.
Wow, she had to take you for a test drive first.
She did. It was
see if you were handsy.
It was the first real date. I didn't know how to be handsy. It was the first real date that I had ever been on was for Beetlejuice.
Oh, wow.
Danny Elfman, you heard our Batman episode where mm-hmm. I was very conflicted. I wanted heroic, and Danny Elfman delivered chaos. Mm-hmm. But walking into Beetlejuice, I've got no stakes in this movie. It's just a ghost comedy. What do I care?
Right.
But the sweeping beginning of this soundtrack was probably more heroic, in my opinion, than the Batman soundtrack. Really kind of addicted to this one. Mm. So, yeah, this is the second collaboration between Burton and Elfman. They would go on to do Batman as their third collaboration.
Hmm.
So, gentlemen, for those listeners that are just now joining us and have not heard our Batman episode, what do we know about Danny Elfman?
Well, he was in the group Oingo Boingo.
Yeah.
Both parents, I think, were musicians, right?
I'm not sure.
I think maybe I made that up. He had previously collaborated with Tim Burton on Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is the greatest movie ever made.
Oh. Agreed.
And,
well, not. I mean, among the greatest movies ever made. But
No, it is okay. The single greatest movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Raiders of the Lost Ark is the best movie ever made.
Well, agree to disagree. I should have brought some note cards if I'd known you were going to ask me that question
quiz us like that.
Well, we can tickle you with other stuff that Danny Elfman has done. Pee-wee's Big Adventure was his first orchestra movie soundtrack. He's also done Edward Scissorhands, Darkman, Nightmare Before Christmas, Nightbreed, Dick Tracy, Sleepy Hollow, Alice in Wonderland, Corpse Bride, Mission Impossible, and many more, including the TV themes for The Flash and Batman animated series. And you cannot get more of a genre composer than Danny friggin' Elfman.
Mm-hmm.
There was one other TV show he did the opening for. What?
Dallas.
No.
No.
The Simpsons.
Oh, the right. Simpsons. Right.
Right. I had a big thing about
them.
Yes. We recognized.
Desperate Housewives also.
Oh, really?
Like mm-hmm. I said, Dallas.
So, last time when we discussed Danny Elfman, it was for the Batman soundtrack. And you guys taught me about the T chord. What?
Did we do that on the air?
What was the creepy ass laugh there, Dr. Husband?
Let's talk about the Tristan chord. Yeah. Yeah, the Tristan chord, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. Ba, ba, ba,
ba, ba, ba, ba. Do you guys know about the T-zone?
No. Is that a wife thing?
No.
No, it's moisturizing when you...
Oh, your face.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
Jack Benny, his radio show in the 40s, they in the 50s, they were selling cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
So they were talking about the T-zone, how this cigarette would help.
Oh, yes.
Your nasal area in your throat.
Oh, my God.
Now, this particular cigarette was good for you and would help your T-zone. And I think he had the Ink Spots come on and do a song about it.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
Back to Danny Elfman.
So are there any Tristan chords that you were able to pick up?
I wasn't listening for them, was I?
I guess not.
I was just enjoying the movie. Oh, my God.
No, I don't think
once again, I'm reminded that I have to do a little bit of homework before we actually sit down and podcast.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
I'm against it.
Oh.
Well, let's dive in and get a taste of this with the main titles, Dr. Bob, if you please. Initial thoughts?
Well, it starts out, I think, I don't know what he was going for. It's with that harp, kind of creepy, plink, 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 plink. Mm-hmm. And then he adds in the piano, the percussive piano. And then by the end, you've got brass band and percussion. It's very circus-like, which,
and does
of
intervals,
course, he used in Batman as well.
He does intervals of a minor third. You know, which is to the Western ear, just sort of like a kind of a sad, you know, doomy, gloomy kind of thing. You know, wonderful Danny Elfman, that driving bass line. Bom, 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 bom. And then he has a syncopation. Bom, bom, da, 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 you know. It's wonderful syncopation. That signature. That's so Danny Elfman.
Are you all right? But certainly much more whimsical in nature than Batman would be a year later.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I am so much more comfortable with this soundtrack than I am with Batman.
Really?
I guess I'm bringing a lot of preconceived notions of what I want Batman to be, and it never gets there. And here I don't care. I'm just along for the ride. I think it's wonderful. Obviously, if you want chaos in your movie, you hire Danny Elfman to score it, and Beetlejuice is a lot of chaos.
Yes.
But this first piece, from my layman's perspective, it's almost like there's three different bands.
Uh-huh.
Three different entire sounds that they're going on.
There's a klezmer-like kind of scent feeling to it as well.
What was it?
Klezmer.
Klezmer. Another thing to write down, ladies and gentlemen. We have just heard another technical term. What is klezmer?
Hold on. I want to make sure I give you the proper definition of it. K-L-E-Z-M-E-R. klezmer is a musical tradition of the Ashkenazi Jews of Central and Eastern Europe, influenced by various genres of cultures. The elements of traditional dance, and what you often hear is the instrumentation can be folkish kind of in nature. Here we go, musical elements. It's obviously the scales, but the ensembles are like, you have, looking for this.
It'd be like string, usually have a string instrument, a clarinet, or some other kind of woodwind.
Pedal notes.
Tambourines. Roma music.
You might have an accordion as well. You might have a stringed instrument like a banjo or something like that, you know. Something folkish like that, you know. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because it goes along with...
Did you say a reed instrument? Like a clarinet or something.
Yeah. Clarinet.
It goes along with folklore and supernatural beliefs and, you know, that kind of area that generated so many stories that we sit around the campfire and tell each other. It's wonderful. And then it gives us a little preview. I think in the beginning you have ghost voices going, Deo.
Yeah.
Yes. Which we get later on.
And I meant to say also, at the end, there's then layers in synthesized voices. Mm-hmm. As part of the texture, not words or anything.
Yeah. That's a Banana Boat song, right? A Banana Man song?
Which, by the way, in 1988, nobody talked about Harry Belafonte till this movie came out.
Right. If you go on Wikipedia, half the time you're looking up these movies and the soundtrack will have its own Wikipedia page.
What?
I know. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. Like, I would have killed for that back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. But Catherine O'Hara and Jeffrey Jones suggested doing that to Harry Belafonte. They suggested the dance, and Tim Burton filmed it, and he wanted to cut it.
Uh-huh.
He did
really?
He did not think it was funny enough.
Oh, my God.
But everyone convinced him to keep it in, and that was the one scene that was a big hit with audiences. Like, they couldn't get over that particular scene.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. It's not, like, laugh out loud, roll on the floor funny.
No.
But it is a fantastic scene.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And even Dick Cavett, who was in that scene, made some suggestions on how to handle the shrimp on the face.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's always butting into everything.
We won't tell our listeners about your ongoing war with Dick Cavett.
No, we haven't spoken since high school.
No. So this soundtrack is all over the place, and as testament, we will slip into the book/obituaries.
So again, starting with the harp, perhaps suggesting the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And the voices. I didn't even notice the voices when we were watching the movie.
No, I didn't even notice the voices when we just listened to it.
Right up there at the beginning.
But he does that all the time. Danny Elfman does that sound in a lot of his synthesized voices.
Synthesized voices.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I mean, he might use
it's
real voices.
Real voices, but it's filtered.
Sampled. It might be sampled and then reprocessed through a synthesizer.
Gotcha. Well, this is the scene where they are just discovering that they're dead, and they're discovering the book.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole world is shattering and their new reality is creating for them. So I guess starting it with a harp would be apropos.
But then we get that, like, really get that klezmer-like sound in this with the stringed instruments and the fact that they're doing dance, a very specific dance sound, a dance form. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of dancing in this movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of the music is similar in that it works to keep you off balance or keep you in a different headspace than a normal movie. So we're going to skip ahead right to the dinner party where they decide to try to scare away the family that has moved into their house and by possessing them and playing Deo.
The Banana Boat song.
So, what is this song doing in this movie?
Well, it's just an absurd insertion to demonstrate Beetlejuice's.
Right. It's not particularly horrifying.
No.
Or scary. But
it's very tongue-in-cheek, which is very much along the style of both Tim Burton and Danny Elfman's, you know, scoring. The idea is that
granted.
You know, they're doing a possession, but it's an awfully silly song to use as a possession.
Right.
You know?
So we know that Burton and Elfman were behind it and, you know, proponents, but from the character standpoint, why pick this song? I mean, it's not happy.
Yeah.
It's kind of dreadful, but still you dance to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an upbeat.
No,
it's a work song. It's a call and response work song that Jamaican slaves would sing.
Right.
Yeah.
And that this particular family would not have any way, any insight into.
Right. Just imagine how absurd it would have been and weird and flat it would have fallen if they had used like Karen Carpenter's love, just the two of us, strangers in many ways. I mean, this is a group song, right? It's a call and response. It's got the person claiming, Catherine O'Hara, I think, does the first movement. Right? And then everybody responds to that. So it's just a fun, silly song that is completely the unexpected entrance into this environment with these characters talking about art and in this bizarre setting with ghosts and, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing that happens from this perspective of the two ghosts that are trying to scare away the family, this would be terrifying. They're expecting them to run.
Right.
But from the perspective of the family, they freaking had a blast.
Yeah.
They're like, this is fun. We want more. So, again, where the two different families looking at the same point of perspective come away with two vastly different takes on it.
Yeah.
The movie did a little work to set us up that the Alec Baldwin character was a Harry Belafonte fan.
Right.
Apparently there are four songs in there. There are only two on the soundtrack, and only two that are diegetic. See, I'm learning. The rest are just background or being played on the record or what have you.
Well, I'd push back a little because the diegetic means one of the characters is performing the song, which is not really the case.
Is performing the song.
Yes.
Not
as part of the action, not just listening and lip syncing.
Not enjoying it. Not aware that it's happening.
Well, Deo, you could make the case, but I mean, they're aware that it's happening at the end even, right, but it's not part of the, like, the character's not actually making the music. They're just hearing it and dancing.
Gotcha. So is there a different technical term for this?
I don't. Probably.
He doesn't probably, ladies and gentlemen. All right, from Deo, we're going to skip ahead, and this is where Otho, the great character Otho in this movie, starts to perform his incantation because they want to summon those ghosts and they want to play around with their new toys, and they're not going to be denied. So, Dr. Bob, if you will, please.
Someone told me that I reminded them of Otho once.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a bad day for them.
Otho is kind of an awesome character. I would have mixed feelings.
Yeah. So, yeah, that starts off with almost just like primitive drums.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Off kilter, keeping you off guard. And then it ends up with this heroic, majestic fanfare with, dare I say, hints of Batman.
Oh.
With the brass and the organ.
You're right. That's even more disturbing about Batman. So this scene is Otho reciting the incantation, and the two ghosts that live in the house start to appear.
Uh-huh.
They start to fill their wedding outfits and stand up on the table, and then they start to degrade.
Yes.
So the heroic sounds that you're hearing are the two protagonists that we're trying to be with. They're dying.
Yeah.
So, again, oh, Batman, that soundtrack. That soundtrack just twists my brain.
And Beetlejuice tries to marry Lydia.
That's the next one. So, in order to stop this madness, Lydia strikes a bargain.
Thank you.
So I meant to say this earlier. In the main titles and in the book, he uses this very sort of Appalachian violin fiddle.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Which has to be intentional that it's sort of old-timey sounding.
Well, right, which speaks to me of forced weddings.
Well, no, I mean, at the like in the book, it seemed to me it was reflective of where the movie was set, like in rural Massachusetts, wherever they were.
I think it's important that you listen to something for a second.
Yes.
So what does that sound like to you?
A clarinet.
Gypsies.
Okay.
Is gypsies a term? Did I just get myself canceled?
We say Roma. Okay. Romani.
Yeah. Romani. Okay. So, so you're hearing this like little percussion, little dance, you know, little, you know, just wonderful little dancey kind of thing. So then we get... I want you to hear this.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I'll never forget the look on my father's face as he gathered me up in his arms and raced to the burning building out on the pavement. And I stood there, shivering in my pajamas.
Dance, one, two,
watched the whole world go up in flames.
Three.
And when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is?
With the banjo?
Mm-hmm.
Syncopation?
If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing.
So that's like a cabaret kind of vile... Kurt Vile, spelled W-E-I-L-L, mm-hmm. Kurt Vile kind of sound. And that's what I think of when I hear this, that sort of Jewish or Romany kind of folksy with, and the idea is that you've got, you know, easily transportable instruments with you, string instruments, clarinet or another reed instrument, maybe some drums of some kind, but basically a small kind of, you're not going to have an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you hear these elements coming out, which is why I keep coming back to that klezmer sound, that you get this mixture of instruments that are relatively small. And they're not always like that. I mean, it's like, but the idea of the folk sound is that it's not meant to be necessarily played in a concert hall. It's more intimately oriented and often associated with a specific event.
So there's something else about the song you just played, and that is it's very sad,
mm-hmm.
but not relentlessly depressing.
Well, that's because a lot of the modes, you know, the modes would be the scales or the upon which the pieces are built, are often not always, but often minor in character or minor in their build, or either harmonic minor or melodic minor or whatever, but often... minor, which has a tendency to when harmonized, gives that sense of sadness or down,
right,
or conflict.
Right.
But this, that,
yeah. That's a gypsy kind of dance.
No, that's square dance.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
No, think about a Romany. Forgive me for using the word gypsy, but think about a Romany kind of seductive kind of dance, and you got this shaker, which is a handheld, easily transportable, impressive instrument with this. But think about the soldier's tale, Stravinsky's soldier's tale.
I'm just talking about the violins.
You're thinking it's. I hear Eastern European.
I hear a square dance.
Okay.
I mean, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
That reminds me,
like, if I heard that on a listening test in undergrad,
yes.
I would say, oh, that's from Stravinsky's Soldier's Tale.
Well, we'll have to play that now.
And this is a music for dance. It's a me, violin. See what I thought about Silver Steel? Yeah.
All right. I'll back down.
No, that's okay. It's whatever you perceive it to be. But like, I just think if I were to crawl inside the mind of Danny Elfman, he was influenced by Stravinsky and klezmer music in his instrumentation. But then you got that beautiful organ. He's just a fucking brilliant composer. He knows how to orchestrate. He knows how to paint a scene beautifully.
Yeah,
he's brilliant.
Like I said, for Batman, he's not interested in heroics. He's interested in atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that Bob is wrong, because this is a, like I mentioned before, kind of in jest, this is a forced wedding.
Mm-hmm.
With a diminutive priest to officiate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are notes here of rural, whether it be square dancing or Eastern European Romani or what have you. This is more about tradition than romance or the ways of the city.
I do note on Wikipedia, which is always correct, that Elfman changed high schools in his teenage years and fell in with a musical crowd who introduced him to Django Reinhardt and Stravinsky.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know how rough and tumble those musical crowds
are. Well, the jazz musicians, you have to watch yourself.
Whisper that. But we turn this around. So our big moment, Beetlejuice gets what he wants. He's married, so it is showtime.
Perfectly encapsulate his compositional style. That 1 minute and 7 seconds.
Yeah.
Since Wikipedia is such a fantastically accurate form of reference, the character of Beetlejuice, envisioned in the first draft of the script, is a winged demon who takes on the form of a short Middle Eastern man, is also intent on killing the Dietzes rather than scaring them, and wants sex from Lydia instead of marriage.
Yeah, I'm glad that didn't fly.
Right.
ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband do all of their research during the recording of the podcast.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm going to surprise you one of these days.
Don't. You're totally fine. So, yeah, we've got that Showtime piece actually has a bit of what I heard to be the Beetlejuice theme.
Yes.
Which I'm not hearing a lot in it. Beetlejuice himself is not actually in this movie a lot.
Right. Like 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. He's so present in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. The trivia section on IMDb says he's about 15 minutes in and that Michael Keaton improv'd 90% of his lines.
Really?
Which
believe it.
Which I would believe, yes. So let's jump to the end credits, which is an absolutely wonderful piece that I could listen to over and over again. Thank you.
So I can hear threads of the beginning is Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
That middle section with the harpy dreamlike stuff, Edward Scissorhands. Oh. The brass theme, which is Beetlejuice's theme. Right. Batman.
Yeah. Oh.
It's all here.
Yes. Much like your favorite bands, sometimes when you're in the mood to for a certain sound, and sometimes you've had enough of one composer and you gotta get away and you move on to somebody completely different. It's the
J.S. Bach, am I right?
Dr. Husband is scandalized.
Don't insult Bach.
So I mentioned this one being my favorite piece. And of course, it starts off strong with the Beetlejuice theme. But I think that this has, you guys are the experts, but I believe this has themes of the house, themes of Lydia, mixed in with it. And those themes are much textured. Oh, look at me. Look at me.
Hey, now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, where I could sit and listen to the Beetlejuice theme because that is bombastic. That's fun. That's big. But then we get into these other themes of like deep sadness or morose or regretness. Themes of regretness. But hey, the movie does not allow us to end on that kind of a note. It doesn't want us to be sad. So what does it do in the end?
It ends with a wonderful dance.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because I did not get sadness out of anything that we've listened to today.
Oh,
even
really?
Even the minor key stuff is still...
Well, it's because it's syncopated fast and
wonderful. Celebratory a little bit.
I get a lot of emotion out of this, and it's not emotions that I'm comfortable with.
Like, so, emotions.
I want to be excited. I want to be in the heroic moment.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be hurtling off the cliff or punching the bad guy or racing to the damsel's rescue. And this is just kind of forcing you to be a person and you know, be in the moment with what's going on. What's
I hear to playful you. Impishness.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's why I love it so much. It's like the soundtrack of my inner dialogue, my inner monologue.
Right.
Hell yes.
I think it's playful impishness through the eyes of a goth chick. Because while I'm hearing the playful impishness that you're talking to, it's through a filter.
Okay.
It's not a, what's the word? Sincere playful impishness. It's almost like an in on the joke playful impishness.
Tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So while Dr. Bob plays this piece for us, Dr. Husband will mimic the dance. And we'll throw that up on the YouTubes.
Do you have any ropes? I'm going to hang me from the ceiling.
What am I playing?
Jump Where are in my the grips?
Line? Jump in the line, yeah.
Shake, 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 Sinora, shake your body liner. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora, work your body liner. Work, 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 Sinora, work it all the time. My girl's name is Sonora, I tell you friends I adore her. And when she dances, oh brother, she's a hurricane in all kinds of weather. Jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you, jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you, jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you, jump in the line, rock your body on time. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake your body line. Whoop. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora, work your body line. Work, 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 Sinora, work it all the time. You can talk about cha-cha,
tango waltz or the rumba. Signora's dance has no title. You jump in the saddle, hold on to the bridle. Jump in the line, rock your body and time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body. Rock your body, child. Jump in the line, rock your body and time. Somebody help me.
That cannot be more different than Deo.
No.
We're talking about opposite ends of the same spectrum here.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
But it's it is a crowd pleaser.
That is Calypso music.
Yeah.
Of course, she probably knew that.
Sure.
Calypso is Caribbean music.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
That incorporates African rhythms and instruments and French Creole music and all blended together. Because as you probably know, Chuck, migrations of peoples, both voluntary and involuntary, has created many, many forms of melded music.
Yeah.
Such as American jazz.
Right.
Did you know that Belafonte's breakthrough album called Calypso, from 1956, was the first million-selling LP by a single artist?
Wow. Yeah.
Nobody hipped me to that, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, more research done during the recording.
Yeah.
I like how you two roll. Fellas, any closing thoughts about this movie and its soundtrack?
Let's watch it again.
Just that, first of all, when I remember seeing this in theater, nobody knew who Alec Baldwin was.
Right.
Gina Davis was a little more famous.
Right.
Nobody knew who Catherine O'Hara was unless you watched SCTV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nobody knew who Winona Ryder was. You were only there for Michael Keaton. And he was only in 12 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, and Gina Davis was the first to sign. Nobody else had any faith in the script. Michael Keaton kept saying, I just don't get it.
And then the scandal a year later when he was cast as Batman.
Oh. So scandal.
Why was the scandal? Why was the scandal?
Because he was a comic actor. Nobody, he can't play Batman.
You don't remember?
No.
Oh my goodness. And then he started, like, he would, for several years, he would do a comedy one year and then a drama the next year. Bam, 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 bam.
If you're a comic fan, every time there's any kind of casting news that the general public becomes aware of, like Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doom, everyone pings you on it.
Oh, everybody has an opinion.
What do you think of Michael Keaton as Batman?
Now, how did that message get carried back in the day before social media with the papers?
Comic stores, your local comic shop.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was delivered in person.
Or the trade magazines.
People magazine. Remember People?
I do.
Oh, right.
Were you a manager of a Blockbuster video?
Yeah. Store manager for years and years.
What was that like? What magical experience was that?
Well, they say the customer's always right.
That's not true.
Customer's always an asshole. Always. I will never go back to retail. There are too many just completely entitled people out there that their philosophy is if they scream loud enough, they're going to get what they want. So it's just,
I don't understand. It's just a fucking video store. What do you have? You either have the videos or you don't have the videos.
Oh, no. I had a bad experience at a Blockbuster.
You did?
Yes. Because I got a notice, a phone call, actually, that they said several movies I had rented were overdue. They were not movies I had ever rented.
Oh, my.
Were they blue?
No, but it
they didn't carry blue movies in
stupid stuff. Like, you know, I think I had been to Blockbuster twice in my life, and they had a record of me checking out like 5 movies a day that they were trying to say were overdue.
Wow.
I know.
Maybe they were looking for Rob Bobinson.
Well, it was at a time when someone that we know of,
ooh,
a relative once upon a time by marriage, was working in Blockbuster, and I just assumed that that person had stolen my credentials. So I don't know. I marched in there and told them to cancel my membership forthwith.
Forthwith.
Which is hard to say when you're angry.
Yes.
There was a big, big, big blizzard in the 90s, like 93 or 94 or something like that.
We moved weren't we in... Remember? We did go to Blockbuster during that big blizzard in the 90s.
Everyone went to Blockbuster during that damn blizzard. The store managers were told, your store will be open no matter what you have to do. You will open that store. Because blizzards are big money for Blockbuster.
Yeah.
So I spent 2 nights, 3 days in the store.
You did? Did you have an air mattress?
No.
Food?
Couldn't spell air mattress. We had the popcorn and...
No, Reese's candy.
And candy.
Oh, you did not.
Yeah, it was kind of rough, but we got through it.
Well, thank you for your service.
Why did you spend so much time? Like, did you stay open 24 hours? Or
no,
you just couldn't get home?
We couldn't get home, and I couldn't get home and be guaranteed to be back the next day.
Oh.
And it was a job-threatening situation.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So,
thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
That was the first time that's when we rented our first... Bollywood.
Video.
No, Bollywood.
That's right. Our first Bollywood movie was in the blizzard of night.
It had to be 99.
Yeah, we were living in Laurel, Maryland, and we could walk to the Blockbuster. And I remember we were sliding on the parking lot because it was terrible. But we walked with them. We got our first Bollywood movie, and we were hooked.
I remember telling one woman when her movie was due back, and she said, no, it's a blizzard out there. I'll never be able to get it back in time. And I said, well, you know, we're making concessions for people. You know, I'm not sure what corporate will say or what. I mealy-mouthed my way through it. Mm-hmm. And then she saw a friend of hers and turned around and said, if you need anything, we've got a four-wheel drive. We can get anywhere.
No.
Right there in front of me.
Oh my God!
Oh,
but they couldn't
get
you an air mattress, huh?
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't try.
Oh,
we've come to the part of the program that is the test.
Uh-oh.
The test for Bob and Rob, gentlemen. I am going to play a piece.
Yes.
You are going to try to tell me what decade it's from.
Okay.
And if you're better than that, you can tell me what composer. And if you're positive, you can tell me what movie. Are you ready? So starting off, any idea what decade?
The 80s.
I'm going to say 2000s.
You're closer. It's 2011.
Okay.
The composer.
It sounds like Danny Elfman, but I doubt that it is.
No, it's not Danny Elfman. When I do these tests, it is somebody that we've previously reviewed on this podcast.
Oh. Well, it's not John Williams.
It is John Williams.
No, come on.
It is John Williams from 2011's Adventures of Tintin.
Oh.
So it seems obvious to me because it starts off with one theme that continues with that same instrument or what have you, and then layers, and then layers, and layers, until it's big and bombastic, but you still have this little theme going along through it. And you end up having seven or eight themes kind of melded along. Am I explaining it right, Tom?
Look at you, trickster.
I thought this was a softball compared to my last test, which was...
I wouldn't have expected John Williams just because it's not big and bombastic.
I wasn't orchestral. Do you think that was a fugue?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you want to play just a little bit of it from the beginning?
This is halfway through.
But it's a theme in development, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a fugue.
No fugue.
Really nice. So I was going to say my guess was, because I was thinking it was like either going to be Dick Tracy.
Well, Dick Tracy.
Or something from Who Framed Roger Rabbit that I couldn't.
But yeah. Now that you say Tintin, I can hear a little influence of like Parisian cafe music.
Okay. Yeah, some European stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
He did a wonderful soundtrack about the plane movie, Catch Me If You Can.
Uh-huh.
The 60s, Tom Hanks is in it. And that has the same playful, no big bombast, just kind of a quieter, a little more playful, down-to-earth themes. So I guess that's him proving he's got range, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather have the best. And on theme with what we were talking about earlier, here is the Ink Spots from one of their commercials for Jack Benny.
Turn up the sound. Give me buckets full of ducats and let me walk around and waller in the Zuma El Dinero. I want to be a millionaire.
Give me money, 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 money.
I want that long green ammunition. That's the stuff for which I'm a wishing. Fill my closets with deposits. I'm a demon at addition. Give me shekels, give me pesos. Let me see their smiling faces.
Give me money, 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 money.
I want to get me a suit that's made out of loot. And whistle the wearing of the green. I've got that monetary itis, like to be just like King Midas.
I want that golden touch is what I mean.
Give me that old double eagle. Want a tender that is legal and financially, substantially, any sum I can inveigle. Want to live in regal splendor with that love and legal tender.
Give me money, 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 money.
When the time comes for smoking, you will know that I'm not joking when I say there's really nothing that can please me more than puffing. Not that cigarette that's super, it's a regular super duper.
Give me lucky, 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 lucky.
I want a smoke I know is cleaner, that is kind for which I'm keener. Make it fresh and better tasting, and there's nothing that I'll be wasting. So I've come to this conclusion, and the brand that I am using
is a lucky, 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 lucky. I want a smooth cigarette. The best I can get, tobacco that's always light and fine.
The only smoke for which I'm caring, I've been tearing and comparing.
It's LSMFT, I'm calling mine.
Give me that deep down smoking pleasure, that's a treasure I can measure. Give me better taste than Lucky's, let me smoke them at my leisure. Cause there's really nothing finer than that smoke from Carolina.
Give me Lucky, 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 Lucky.
Now about Jackson that he'll break the seal on that new pack of Luckies. We'll go on from here.
Good Lord.
God bless capitalism.
We do not endorse Lucky Strikes or cigarettes of any kind, and really, you should not smoke.
But what about your T-zone, Chuck?
What about the T-zone? All right, folks, that is all for today. If you've got thoughts you're burning to share with us, Dr. Bob will tell you where you can write your missives.
Well, for now, you can find it on all the social medias at GoGoCheckPod. But coming soon, a dedicated Nerd Orchestra social media presence.
I'm so excited. My toes are curling.
My toes are curling. Did someone touch your T-zone?
I highly recommend our sister podcast, Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband, take an in-depth look at DC checkerboard-covered comics of the 1960s. It's not only groovy, it's my favorite podcast.
Checkered Bed!
Please do the like and subscribe tango and check us out in about 1 month as we delve deep into some of your favorite exciting soundtracks. And with that, we close things out by rolling the credits and acknowledging that we've come to
the end.